Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to try to explain why these things are happening and reveal what it means not only to those you love and how it will affect them, but what it will mean for the days that lie ahead. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms. We're going to speak of His Torah, which means teaching, not law, which is something that is understood and you gain intellectually from, as opposed to something you obey. And we're going to speak of His covenant, and especially of the renewal of His covenant and why He established His covenant with us in the first place. As always, for those who are rational, this will be the best part of today's program. Normally, at this time, I would share the phone number for our program and invite whoever wishes to add to the conversation to call us. But today's show has been pre-recorded. I've done so because I'm attending a family wedding. I will be back live with you again on Monday. One last note before we begin. If you are interested in seeking verification for anything I say, if you want the evidence behind the conclusions, then I invite you to read a website that contains my most recent book. You'll find it at introtogod.org, introtogod.org. That's a 1,100-page analysis of the seven things most important to God: His word, His name, the very essence of this discussion, His Torah, which means His teaching, His covenant, His terms and conditions for participating in that covenant, or His instructions, if you will. This then leads to His invitations to meet with Him and His way. These topics are not only presented from His testimony, but in addition to that, in an intro to God, I provide you with the tools that you will need not only to verify everything that I have shared, not only to affirm the translations that are prepared for you in that book, but also the very tools that will equip you to go on your own voyage of discovery and enjoy the process of engaging with God in this way. My first book on Yahweh was entitled Yada Yah. You'll find it at yadayah.com. Hebrew is Yada is the Hebrew word for to know. Yah is the familial form of Yahweh's name. So at yadayah.com, you will find a 7-volume book, some 2,500 pages that present Yah's prophetic testimony so that you might come to know for certain that He exists. And you will know what He has predicted and promised. Prophecy is how God proves His existence and proves His authorship of His testimony. For those statements that I make about Islam, you will find the proof for them in the 1,000 pages of Prophet of Doom. You can go to prophetofdoom.net for that. As in the case with the introtogod.org and yatayah.com, prophetofdoom.net is entirely free. The entire book is presented for your review without cost. The same thing is true at questioningpaul.com. There you will find proof that Paul was a false prophet and should be entirely disregarded. We are continuing to celebrate Sukkah, this celebration of camping out with God on this Friday. And so in our review of Yah's testimony, we will advance our understanding of this very special occasion. earlier in the week, on Monday and again on Tuesday, we spoke at length about the corruption of Roman Catholicism and its sexual abuse. On Monday, we had a call from Peter, who shared his personal horror, not once but twice, at the hands of the Roman Catholic Church in Canada, where he was sexually abused as a young boy, and then as a man abused again when he sought an apology and support from the very institution that had ripped away his youth. During those discussions, I had promised that I would provide more information on the pervasive nature of the sexual abuse scandal that has now erupted in Australia, in the Victorian province of the land down under. And I'm going to do so now as part of this program. It's important that you understand the scope of the pedophilic priest phenomenon that has haunted the Roman Catholic world. This story out of Australia is just one of scores of countries where similar allegations have been affirmed and where the scope is massive in scale. Peter's claims do not stand alone. The Roman Catholic Church has abused millions of children. This report I'm going to share with you came from Wikipedia. It is the result of the collaboration and research of many individuals. It begins, "The Catholic sexual abuse scandal in Australia is part of the wider Catholic sexual abuse scandal, which are a series of convictions, trials, and ongoing investigations into allegations of sex crimes committed by Catholic priests and members of their religious orders. As at August 2011, according to Broken Rights, a support and advocacy group for church-related sex abuse victims." Imagine that you have to, there are so many of them, you actually have to have advocate groups for church-related sex abuse victims. "There have been over 100 cases where Catholic priests have been charged for child sex offenses in Australia, as well as others involving non-custodial sentences and inconclusive proceedings. There are also numerous cases involving members of religious orders, both priests and brothers and lay teachers, although the latter are not the subject of this article as it appears on Wikipedia. Other sources concern, in addition, other sources of concern, I should say, in addition to the abuse itself, was the failure of the Roman Catholic Church to prevent future abuse by clergy who had come to the attention of the religious authorities of dioceses and the religious orders or schools, transferring clergy and religious individuals to further opportunities for abuse. The handling of allegations of abuse, and the continuing honoring within the church of known sex offenders." That's a powerful statement. What this says is the same thing that we have read worldwide, that when Roman Catholic priests were found to have engaged in acts of pedophilia, abusing young boys and girls, that their immediate supervisors were instructed by individuals as high up as cardinals and even the Pope to sweep the matter under the rug, to hide the evidence, to not expose the crime, to not apologize for the crime, to instead deny. And that's what they've done. And what they would do is they would simply transfer the priest to a new venue where his pedophilic tendencies were unknown, and therefore make it possible, actually enabling the pedophile to find more victims. They're also accused, here as elsewhere around the world, of specifically mishandling the allegations of abuse. In other words, covering them up in direct breach of all forms of national and international law. Aiding and abetting the pedophiles and failing to disclose the crime. You know, it is a crime to witness a crime, to be made aware of a crime and not report it. And want the evidence of that? Look at Penn State. When they were notified that Sandusky was committing acts of pedophilia on their premises and they did not report it. That is a crime. Third, the Roman Catholic Church is being accused here, as it is around the world, of dishonoring the victims of their priestly abuse, perpetrating anguish on those they had already tormented. Now, this story continues. In 2012, a police report detailed 40 suicide deaths directly related to abuse by Catholic clergy in Victoria alone. In one state of one country, Australia, 40 individuals committed suicide because of the tragic burden that was perpetrated upon them by the Roman Catholic Church and its priests. 40 suicide deaths. Roman Catholicism is deadly. A bishop in the Newcastle diocese has supported some of the public inquiry into the issue. But there's none others that are even listed as Roman Catholics who supported the investigation as to why 40 Catholics took their lives. On September 13th of 2011, a senator used parliamentary privilege to name a priest as the alleged perpetrator of 6 sexual assaults on John Hepworth about 50 years earlier. So this case came to light not because the Roman Catholic Church had a conscience, not because they wanted to do the right things for the victims, not because they wanted to apologize for their past crimes, not because they wanted to stop priests from continuing to abuse young boys and girls, but because they were caught by the public authorities, who were vastly more honorable than were they. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back to this story in a moment. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. That debate last night, if you can call it a debate, was just so entertaining. The president's primary mode of attack was straw man. And the purpose and debate of a straw man is if you cannot defeat what your opponent has said, if you can't prove that what your opponent has said is false, what you do is you can create your own personal version of your opponent, and then you attack the straw man that you have created. For example, last night, the two candidates, this is from the article, attacked each other's economic plans, with Mr. Obama describing his rival's approach as top-down economics and a retread of Bush-era policies. Mr. Romney derided Mr. Obama's policies as trickle-down government. Now, here's the truth. Romney is supply-side. Bush wasn't supply side. Romney is supply side. Supply side economics, it was conceived by a fellow, a professor Laffer, I believe he's a professor at USC of economics, who said that if the economy as a whole grows because you have taxed people less and they are willing to invest more in their businesses, that when the economy as a whole grows, that by taxing people less, you'll actually receive more money. And that's exactly what happened. The tax rates were lowered, the economy prospered, and the lower rate over a larger economy produced more revenue for the federal government. That is precisely Romney's plan. And yet, the president calls it Bush's plan. Now, he ought to have been able to research that little bit and understand the nature of supply-side economics. And by the way, it worked. Now, the president says that he is following the Clinton plan, which he said was really successful, lowering deficits and putting more people to work. But, you see, there was no Clinton plan. The very plan that Clinton took credit for was the contract with America. That was Newt Gingrich's plan. The prosperity that we enjoyed under the Clinton administration was because there was a wholesale change in Congress, because Newt Gingrich came up with this idea that why don't we put in writing precisely what we will do if the American people elect us? And then they did what they said they were going to do. The Clinton prosperity was a direct result of the contract with America. It was promoted by the U.S. Congress at the direction of the American people. And you could even say, and I don't know why Romney didn't say it, but all right, let's just assume for a moment that there really was a Clinton plan, and that the Clinton plan produced this prosperity as opposed to the contract with America. Let's make that assumption. If it's so darn good, why didn't you use it? Why are you talking about it now? You've been president for 4 years. Things are worse now than they were before. Either you did try to use it and it failed, or you haven't yet used it, so why would you describe your plan as if it were his plan? You know, the other last comment I want to make on this debate is that Mr. Obama prepared for a debate that did not occur. His primary argument was that Romney lacked specificity in how he was going to deal with issues regarding health care and the economy. And yet, during the entire debate, it was Romney who provided specific examples. He would cite one example after another, very specific examples of what things he would do differently and what effect they would have. And yet, the president accused him of lacking specifics when it was the president who lacked specifics. It was just a horrible experience to see. You know, I'm an American. I really dislike Obama, to see the president of the United States do that poorly in a publicly televised event where the whole world can see how poorly we are led. It is obvious that this president has no concept whatsoever as to what drives the free enterprise system. He has never worked a day in his life in free enterprise. He hasn't run a business in free enterprise. He hasn't ever built a company. He's got no clue whatsoever as to what drives America. And that is why we're in such a mess. That said, I promised that I would turn to a letter that was written, and I'm going to use the individual's first name because there are millions of people by this name, so they will remain otherwise anonymous. It was a letter that was sent to me at Prophet of Doom. The initial statements are reasonably accurate. It's the last statements this individual made that are inaccurate, and you will then we will go into my response to them. I guess we're going to have to do both after the break. But if you are one who knows that there's something wrong with your religion, if you're open to the truth, this next segment will be especially enlightening. So please stay tuned. And if you would like to engage in our discussion, we again encourage you to call 877-300-7645. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. It is my pleasure to share a letter with you that was written to me at Prophet of Doom. The letter was signed by an individual whose first name we're going to use so that they remain otherwise anonymous. It says, "Greetings. Thank you for having the guts to say what needs to be said. So many today seem to run for cover when it comes to discussing the truth about Islam. Free speech is rapidly becoming sacrificed at the altar of Muslim appeasement due to fear of how their communities will respond. This response comes without exception with intimidation, threats, and violence. Is Allah so impotent that he cannot defend his own honor. Now, if that letter had ended there, would have been fine and good. I simply would have thanked Stephen for his kind words. It does take courage to convey the truth. When you assail, criticize, expose and condemn religious myths, political myths, patriotic myths, economic myths, most people respond very harshly. In America, for the most part, you are slandered, you are criticized, you're impugned, you're demeaned, and in the Islamic world, you're killed for doing so. And it is true that appeasement is born out of political correctness, is diminishing people's will to tell the truth. But what's interesting, of course, is this individual, whom his next statements will promote Christianity. When it comes to telling the truth about Christianity, they're not so inclined to be receptive. It doesn't then take guts to tell the truth. It is being misled that would cause someone to tell the truth from their perspective. So here's what they say. Consider what the God of the Christians says. Now, before I quote what he wrote that the God of the Christians says, just think of that for a moment. The God of the Christians. So are we to assume that Christianity has its own God? Now, it does. It's just that the Christian God isn't God. It's a God conceived in the image of a man. In fact, the Christian God is a man. A man by a name that didn't even exist for 1,600 years after that man lived. It was a man that they took out of his context and put him into the context of Babylon, turning him more into Tammuz and Dionysus and Osiris and Bacchus than he was the living embodiment of the Torah. But anyway, I digress. Consider what the God of the Christians says. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. End quote. Now, that particular statement, and I'm going to read the rest of this, and then I'll tell you where that statement comes from. My God sits in the heavens and laughs at those who take aim at him. Please continue the good work, and may Jesus Christ strengthen and prosper your endeavors. Kind regards, Stephen. His citation was from Romans 12:9. Romans is Paul's thesis. His first letter was to the Galatians. And his sixth letter was to the Romans. Romans confirms the thesis that he began in Galatians. In Galatians, a letter written to the Galatians, the false prophet takes the position that the Torah has been annulled, that the Torah could not save anyone, that those who embrace the Torah are slaves to it, that the Torah is a cruel taskmaster, and that it is a cruel disciplinarian, and that it once may have had a purpose, but that purpose no longer exists. He assails the Torah. In this letter, he assails vehemently the sign of the covenant, which is circumcision. And Paul, at the turning point in his letter to the Galatians, says that there are two covenants, not one, which is completely contrary to God's testimony. And he says that the one that was revealed at Mount Sinai, which would be the one that is presented in the Torah, is of the flesh, that it was enslaving, that it is associated with Hagar. Now, all of that is that absolute lie. The covenant that is presented in the Torah is the one and only covenant. There are no other covenants. There is one. It is always singular. And it is the one that was presented to Abram, who became Abraham, and is the same covenant that God affirmed through Yishak and through Jacob and through Yisrael and to us today. The covenant has not even been renewed. It will one day be renewed. We were considering that passage in yesterday's show. And we'll return to it in the second half of today's show. the covenant has not yet been renewed. There is one covenant, and it is the covenant that was created between Yahweh and Abraham. And it is the covenant that liberates man from slavery. Hagar was banished. The covenant was not with her. It was not with her son. In fact, when Abraham said, could Ishmael be the heir of this covenant? God said, absolutely not. Paul knew it. What he wrote was a lie, but that lie is the basis of Pauline doctrine, and thus the basis of the religion of Christianity. Now, as it relates to the passage that he quoted, vengeance is mine, says the Lord, I will repay. That's a quotation from Romans 12:9. Guess who wrote Romans 12:9? Paul. Paul was a false prophet. Now, what Paul does every time that he cites a passage from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he removes it from its context, he misquotes it, and then he twists it to serve his agenda. 100% of Paul's citations are removed from their context. He'll even truncate part of a sentence, as he did here, twist it, mistranslate it, and then use it to serve his agenda, which is usually the antithesis of Yahweh's message. It reads in Romans 12:19, this is the American Standard Version, never take your own revenge, beloved, but have room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Well, that's not what God actually said. The passage is found in, that particular passage is a amalgamation of several passages as opposed to one. You have to blend them together to get to that. But in Devarim, which has been corrupted to Deuteronomy, it reads that vengeance is mine. That part is accurate, and so is recompense. Recompense is compensation. It's a reward. God is making a contrast here. That the choices that we make in our lives, if we are religious, for example, there's a consequence of that. And if we choose to embrace the covenant, there's a benefit associated with that. The benefit is the reward. It's the compensation. Vengeance is the consequence. Everything that Yah says in his Torah is about this choice. And either us suffering the consequence or us enjoying the reward of having chosen wisely. So it begins. Vengeance is mine, and so is recompense, which is compensation and a reward. At the time when their foot shall slide, he is speaking of those who would choose to be religious. God hates religion. He said, at a time when their foot shall slide, there will be a time when their foot shall slide. What he's telling them is that the consequence of them having chosen poorly is they're going to bring it on themselves. There's a time when their foot shall slide. They're going to trip up over their own hypocrisy, over their own corruptions. For the day of their calamity is at hand. God sees yesterday, today, and tomorrow as if they were all one. And the things that are to come upon them shall make haste. The things that are going to come upon them, speaking of those who would corrupt Yah's testimony and reject his covenant, as Paul did, that the consequence is going to come on them. There will be a consequence. That's what he's saying. So very different from what Paul wrote and what Stephen quoted. So anyway, that particular discussion I did not include in the letter. I just thought I'd share that with you so that you have a better feel for how Paul goes about corrupting God's testimony and how Christians side with Paul. So here is my response to Stephen. Stephen, we agree that it takes courage to tell the truth today, and it takes work too. I tell the truth, or to tell the truth, you have to invest the time to learn it. With Islam, I invested 10,000 hours studying the Quran and Hadith, so I understand Muhammad, Allah, and Islam. That's something I really want everyone to appreciate. You know, there was a time when Jerry Falwell and I were very close friends. I spent thousands of hours with Jerry Falwell. And with Jerry, he read T. with Harris and parts of Prophet of Doom long before they were published. And so he knew that Muhammad was a terrorist. But he had not himself studied the material. He didn't own the material. He didn't go from knowing the material well enough to present it and to understanding the material so he could do so spontaneously. And so he was doing a television appearance, and he said that Muhammad was a terrorist. But he couldn't back it up. He didn't cite any proof. Now, the proof is ubiquitous. The proof is undeniable. But he didn't know it. And so when he was challenged on it, he backed down. Terrible thing to do. And so whether you're going to speak for Yahweh or you're going to speak on for the purpose of exposing and condemning false doctrines, it is important that you prepare first. Come to know the subject. Know, understand, then present. Allah and Yahweh, I wrote to Stephen, are opposites. Allah is Satan. Yahweh is God. Yahweh is not a Christian. Yahweh hates all religion. Now we're going to return to this paragraph and consider who Yahweh is and why he hates the title Lord when we return to Shattering Myths after the break. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. The thing that I was negligent in sharing with you, and I apologize for this in this past segment, is I exposed not one of, but Paul's principal ploy, which is to take something that God said out of context, to truncate it, to abridge it, and then to misquote it, and then misapply it. And said that that's the basis of really all of Paul's letters, the basis of Pauline doctrine, and that it is a corruption of God's testimony. Now, what I didn't share with you is that it's the basis of every religion. Islam is based on the same premise. Rabbis took God's statements out of context. They mistranslated them. They abridged them. And then they misapplied them to promote their religion. It is from the Talmud that Muhammad created his Quran. Most of the Quran, at least the parts that aren't just repulsive and violent, the credible parts of the Quran are twisted and bastardized presentations of Talmud readings that Muhammad bought from rabbis in Yathrib. So exactly the same premise is what drives Islam. But that isn't unique to Islam and Christianity. You see, the first experience that we have, the first proof that we have is that the adversary would create lies in this way occurred in the Garden of Eden. Now, for you Christians who are listening to say, I can't believe that God would allow anyone to corrupt his word, God tells us that because of free will, he did this very thing. He allowed Satan to corrupt his testimony. And so he is absolutely willing to let us corrupt his testimony. We don't have the authority to do so, but we have the free will to do so. Bad to do so, dumb, 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 to quote the show on Mormonism, but we have the free will to do so. The first episode of anyone corrupting Yah's testimony, of taking it out of context and misapplying it, is when Satan was allowed by God to slither into the garden, was allowed by God to take what he said out of context, was allowed by God to misquote him, and to twist what he had said to serve a different agenda. And Chawa was fooled by it, because the only lies that are actually beguiling are lies that are derived from a corruption of the truth. Let me give you a great example, a counterfeit bill. A counterfeit bill is absolutely worthless. In fact, it's illegal. And yet, what a counterfeit bill does to make itself look credible is it tries to copy the original. It's based on the original, but is a inaccurate copy of it and therefore is worthless. Lies become believable. They're credible when they corrupt the truth. It isn't that everything that Paul wrote is untrue. It's worse than that. It's that some of what he said is true, which gives credibility to the most of the things that he said, which are not true. Half-truths are much more beguiling than are outright lies, and therefore more deadly. Now, in this next paragraph, in my response to Stephen, I wrote, Yahweh is not a Christian. He hates all religion. God is anti-religion. In fact, this would be a complete statement, a complete sentence. Goddamn religion. Yahweh uses the Lord's title in reference to Satan. Throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, when he refers to HaSatan, the adversary, the title that he uses is Baal. Baal means the Lord. Yahweh uses the Lord's title to describe Satan because Satan wants to lord over men. He wants to own them. He wants to control them. God has no such desire. If God wanted to lord over men, if he wanted to control men, you'd open your eyes and he would be 4,000 feet tall and dominate the horizon. He would tell anyone who doesn't bow down before him that you're going to be zapped, and he would do so. If God wanted to lord over men, he would do so. It's easy for him to do so, should that have been his desire, but it isn't. It's the antithesis of his desire. That's the reason why the Lord title is the antithesis of Yahweh and a perfect fit for the adversary, Satan. So when we ascribe the Lord title to Yahweh, we are committing the most grave infraction that can possibly be perpetrated. So I wrote to Stephen, Lord defines Satan's ambition, which are the antithesis of Yah's will. I'm afraid that your Bible translations have led you astray in this regard. And Yahweh says that the replacement of his name with the satanic title Lord is the single greatest crime that man has ever perpetrated. You'll find that crime presented in the book written to the Goyim specifically to expose the consequence of religion. The book is entitled Yirmiyahu. You may know it as Jeremiah. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that